She doesn't love him. She loves me. Forever. You don't love him, Sloane, I say, my face twisting in pain. You don't! He brainwashed you! I grab her cheeks and press my lips to hers. She's trying to pull away from me, trying to fight me.
Yes, I do! She screams. I love him! I hate you! I love him! I fucking hate you!
She's going to regret this. She's going to regret this more than she's ever regretted anything in her whole fucking worthless life. If she thinks she's sad now, watching that bastard die, wait until she sees me die. Because every motherfucker left in this house will be dead, including me, before I go to prison for this dipshit's murder. She barely knew the guy. She's loved me for 2 fucking years. My death would fucking devastate her. She'll be crying so hard, she won't have enough air to say she hates anyone. Whore, whore, whore. I smack my hand against my forehead again. She's no longer screaming now. She's just sobbing uncontrollably. You're going to regret this, Sloane. You think you're crying hard now? When I die, it'll fucking kill you. It will fucking kill you. She shakes her head back and forth, sobbing through her words.
It's too late to kill me, Asa. You killed me a long time ago.
She's delusional. She's goddamn delusional. I laugh, knowing how much this is going to upset her. I laugh, knowing how much she's going to regret everything she just said to me. I wish I could be here to see it when she finally realizes how much I mean to her. How much I've done for her. What her life will be like without me. I press my mouth against her trembling lips. I press the gun to the side of my head, and I pull the fucking...
42. Luke, you know what they say dying feels like? No, you don't know what they say because no one says it. The people who die aren't around to tell us what it felt like when it happened. The people who lived never died to begin with, so they're unable to describe it. But I'm in it, so let me tell you about it while I still can. There's a moment. A split second right before you close your eyes for the very last time when you can actually feel yourself embracing death. You can feel your heart as it begins to slow down, preparing to come to a halt. You can feel your brain shutting off, the circuits slamming shut like doors. You can feel your eyes closing, no matter how fucking hard you try to keep them open. And you realize that whatever you're looking at in the moment you close your eyes, that's the last thing you're ever going to see. I see Sloane. She's all I see. I see her screaming. I see Asa pick her up and throw her on the bed. I see her trying to fight him off. I see her giving up. That's why I refuse to close my eyes. I look down at the blood pouring from my chest, the life seeping out of me and onto the floor. I've made enough mistakes that caused Sloane to be in the position she's in right now. I refuse to die without correcting a few of them. It takes everything in me, but I stretch my arms out until I'm able to reach the gun at my ankle. There's blood all over my hands, so I struggle getting a grip on it, but finally manage. I may not be the best at my profession in a lot of areas, but I have one hell of an aim. Right when I lift my gun, Asa points his gun at himself. No fucking way is he getting off that easy. I refuse to close my eyes as I wrap my finger around the trigger and squeeze, watching as the bullet penetrates his wrist, sending his gun several feet across the room. I refuse to close my eyes when the sounds of 3 more shots penetrate my ears, this time coming from the direction of the bedroom door. I refuse to close my eyes as I watch Ryan kick open the door and rush in, followed by several other men. I refuse to close my eyes until Asa is on the floor, several feet away from Sloane, being handcuffed. I refuse to close my eyes until they meet Sloane's. She's off the bed, across the room, on her knees, pressing her hands to my chest, doing everything she can to keep the rest of the life from seeping out of me. I don't even have enough energy left to tell her it's too late. I close my eyes for the last time. But it's okay, because she's all I see. She's the last thing I'll ever see.
43. Sloane. This feeling is nothing new to me. I've experienced living through the death of someone I've loved before. Horrendous, heart-wrenching, soul-crushing death. It was 1 month before I turned 13. I had twin brothers, Stephen and Drew. From early on, I basically became their caretaker. Both my brothers had a lot of medical issues, but my mother used to leave all hours of the night, regardless of their needs. She would go through spurts where she could be the mother she needed to be. She'd get them to their doctor's visits for the medications they needed in order to convince the state she was a decent mother. But then she'd leave the majority of their everyday care up to me while she went out and partied or did whatever it was she did until the early hours of the morning. The night Drew died, my brothers were in my care. I can't remember all the details because I try not to think about that night too much, but I remember hearing him fall in his bedroom. He had seizures frequently, and I knew he had more than likely just had a seizure, so I ran to his room to check on him. When I opened the door, he was on the floor, his whole body jerking from the seizure. I dropped to my knees and held him as still as I could, but since he had turned 10, it became increasingly difficult for me to help him due to the fact that he and Stephen were already bigger than me. I did my best, holding his head until it was over. It wasn't until the seizure had stopped completely that I noticed the blood. It was all over my hands and on my clothes. I started to panic when I saw the gash on the side of his head. Blood was everywhere. When he had fallen from the seizure, he hit his head on the door hinge going down. We didn't have a phone, so I was forced to leave him alone in the room while I ran to a neighbor's house and called 911. By the time I returned, he was no longer breathing. I'm not sure he ever took another breath after the moment I left him. I wasn't aware at the time that he had died from the blow to his head, but I realize now that he had probably died before I even dialed 911. I changed after that night. Before that moment, I still held on to a little hope for my life. I knew that no one could be cursed as a child with such awful parents, only to then go on to have an equally awful adolescence and adulthood. Until that point, I thought maybe everyone's life had an equal balance of good and bad, and the only difference was that the good and bad luck was dispersed to each person differently at different points in their lives. I had hope that all my bad luck had been dispersed early on in my life, and that things would only get easier. But that night changed my way of thinking. Drew could have fallen anywhere in that bedroom other than where he did. In fact, the doctor said the location of his injury was so unfortunate, he could have fallen a mere 6 centimeters to the left or right, and he would have been fine. 6 centimeters. That's all that separated Drew from life. The impact to his temple killed him almost instantly. I obsessed over that 6 centimeters for months, long after my mother had stopped pretending to grieve his death. I obsessed over it, because I knew that if he had fallen 6 centimeters to the left or right, his survival would have been referred to as a miracle. But what happened to Drew was the opposite of a miracle. It was a tragic accident. A tragic accident that made me lose my belief in miracles altogether. By the time I was 13, anything labeled a miracle pissed me the hell off. That's one of the main reasons why I never partook much in social media. The amount of miracles seen in my Facebook newsfeed would make my eyes practically roll out of my head. So many people cured of cancer thanks to the prayers of all their Facebook friends. It's benign. Hallelujah. God is so good to me. There were many times I wanted to reach through my laptop screen and grab those people by the shoulders and scream, "Hey, guess what? You aren't special." Lots of people die from cancer. Where was their miracle? Did their Facebook friends not pray enough? Why did their chemotherapy not work? Because they didn't post enough public prayer requests on social media? Why didn't they get their miracle? Does God think less of their lives than those whose lives he spares? No. Sometimes cancer is cured. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes people hit their heads and die. Most of the time, they hit their heads and survive. And any time you hear of a person beating the odds, that's all they're doing. Beating the odds. Because people never really think about how, in order to beat the odds, a lot of unfortunate deaths have to occur for that particular survival to be considered out of the norm. Maybe Drew's death hardened me to the idea of miracles, but in my mind, you either survive or you don't. The journey from first breath to death has nothing to do with miracles, how much you pray, coincidences, or divine intervention. Sometimes a person's journey from first breath to death isn't always part of a master plan. Sometimes the only thing that separates your final breath from your death is a mere 6 centimeters. That's why, when the doctor walked into the waiting room to update me on Luke's condition, I had to sit down when he said, "If the bullet had made impact just 6 centimeters to the left or right of where it did, Luke would have died instantly. Now all we can do is pray for a miracle." I failed to tell the doctor that I don't believe in miracles. Luke is either going to survive, or he's not.
"You should go grab some coffee," Ryan says. "Stretch your legs."
Luke came out of surgery over 8 hours ago. He lost a lot of blood and had to have a transfusion, and I've refused to leave his side since. I shake my head. "I'm not leaving until he wakes up." Ryan sighs, but he knows there's no talking me out of my decision. He walks to the door.
"I'll bring you a coffee then."
I watch as he exits the room. He's been at this hospital the entire time I have, even though I know there are probably job-related things he should be doing right now. Giving statements about what happened last night. Taking statements. Dealing with a murder, an arrest, an attempted murder. I never saw them take Asa out of the bedroom last night because I was too worried about Luke to care what happened to him. But I could hear him. The whole time I was pressing my hands against Luke's chest, waiting on the paramedics to arrive, Asa was behind me yelling, "Let him die, Sloan. He doesn't love you. I love you. I do." I never turned around to acknowledge him or his words. I continued to try to help Luke while they pulled Asa out of the bedroom. The last thing I heard him say was, "It's my fucking cake. Let me take my fucking coconut cake." I don't know what's going to happen next with Asa. I'm certain there will be some sort of trial, but I honestly don't want to testify. I'm afraid if I testify, he'll get off easier than he should, because I would have to be honest. I'd have to tell them about all the things I've witnessed in his behavior, specifically the drastic changes in recent weeks. It's obvious to everyone who knows him that he's developing symptoms of schizophrenia, the same hereditary illness his father had. But if that's the case, he'll more than likely be sentenced to a high-security mental health facility than a prison. And even though I do want him to get help for whatever is going on with him, I also want him to pay. I want him to pay for every single thing he's ever done, and I want him to pay forever in a prison where he'll rot with men who are probably twice as evil as he could ever dream of being. Some might call that bitter. I just call it karma. I grip the arms of my chair and whisper to no one, "I'm done thinking about you, Asa Jackson." And I am. He's taken up way too much of my life already, and now I just want to focus on the future, on Stephen, on Luke. There are tubes and wires and IVs hooked up to him, but I'm somehow still able to find an area on his bed where I can fit if I curl up just right. I crawl under the bed with him, and I wrap my arm over him, lay my head on his shoulder, and close my eyes. Several minutes later, Ryan's voice pulls me out of my slumber.
Coffee.
I open my eyes, and he's sitting on the chair by the bed, holding a coffee out to me. It's probably the fifth cup I've had since Luke came out of surgery, but I'm pretty sure I'm good for about a million more, if it takes that long. Ryan sits back in his chair and takes a sip of his coffee, then grips it with both hands and leans forward.
Did he ever tell you how we met?
Ryan asks. I shake my head. I can see a nostalgic smile begin to play on Ryan's lips.
We were assigned a job together a while back. He broke cover the second night we were there,
Ryan says, shaking his head.
I was so angry at him, but I knew why he did it. I can't go into all the details, but if he hadn't outed himself when he did, a kid would have lost his life. Luke couldn't have lived with himself if that had happened. I knew in that moment that he had the worst kind of heart for this job, but as pissed as I was at him, I respected the hell out of him for what he did. He cared more about the life of a kid he didn't even know than he did about his own career. And that's not a flaw, Sloan. That's a character trait. I'm pretty sure they call it compassion, he says with a wink.
Ryan's story makes me smile for the first time in forever. That's the sexiest thing about him, I whisper. His compassion.
He shrugs. I don't know. He's got a great ass.
I laugh. I wouldn't really know. Luke was sitting down when I had my only chance to see it. I put my coffee on the bedside table and then lean in and give Luke a peck on the mouth. I've made sure to kiss him every chance I get, just in case I don't get many more chances. When I pull my lips from his and start to rest my head on his pillow, I hear a quiet noise come from his throat. Ryan leaps out of his chair at the same moment I lift my head back up.
Did he just make a noise?
Ryan asks, his voice full of disbelief. I think so, I whisper. Ryan waves his arm toward Luke.
Kiss him again! I think it woke him up!
I do. I kiss him lightly on the lips again, and there's no mistaking the noise Luke makes this time. He's definitely waking up. We both stare at him for a moment while his eyelids flutter open and then shut several times.
Luke, can you hear me?
Ryan asks. Luke finally forces his eyes open, but he doesn't look directly at Ryan. Instead, his eyes move painfully around the room until he's looking at me, curled up at his side. He stares for a moment, and then, with a weak voice, he whispers,
Kaleidoscope, belt buckles, see leprechauns when the fog drops it like it's hot.
Tears immediately form in my eyes, and I have to choke back my cry.
Oh, God, Ryan says. He's not making any sense. This isn't good. I'll go get the doctor.
He runs out of the room before I can tell him that Luke is perfectly fine. I lift my hand to Luke's face and touch his lips. I whisper, Depressed baguettes linger on the playground, eating bowls of cereal until the slugs wilt. My voice cracks with my relief, with my happiness, with my gratefulness. My lips meet his, and even though I know this isn't good for him and he's probably in a lot of pain, I hug him wherever I can and kiss him in all the places I can reach on his face and neck. I wrap myself around him, careful to keep my arms and hands away from his injuries. I lie quietly with him while the tears roll down my cheeks.
Sloan, he says, his voice gravelly. I can't remember what happened after I fucked everything up. Did you end up saving me?
I laugh and lift up on my elbow. Not really, I say quietly. You shot Ace's gun out of his hand, and then I ran over to you and put pressure on your wound until the paramedics got there. I'd say it was a mutual save.
He tries to force a smile. I told you I wasn't very good at my job, he says.
I smile in wholehearted agreement. It's not too late to quit, you know. You could go back to school and become a Spanish teacher.
He winces with his laugh. That's not a bad idea, Sloan.
He struggles to lean forward in order to kiss me, but it takes everything in him. He's only 6 centimeters away.
a mere 6 centimeters between breath and life. When I close that 6-centimeter gap and kiss him, I know I'm closing a chapter, a really dark chapter that I've been waiting more than 2 years to end. And this kiss is just the beginning of a whole new book. A book where maybe miracles aren't that far-fetched.
44. Asa. I sit up straight and open my eyes. Not that I was sleeping. No one could sleep in this goddamn place. I clench my fists, wondering why it's just now hitting me. She didn't say harder. She said Carter. Fucking whore!
45. Sloan. I tap lightly on the door to his hospital room, but no one responds. When I push it open and peek inside, Luke is asleep. The volume to the TV is low, but audible. I glance over to the couch, and Ryan is lying on his side, a ball cap covering his eyes. He's asleep too. I hold the door while it closes, not wanting to wake either of them, but Ryan hears me and sits up on the couch. He stretches his arms over his head and yawns, then stands up.
Hey, he says. You gonna be here a while?
I nod. I'll probably stay here tonight, I whisper. You go get some rest. He glances over at Luke again and says,
The doctor came by earlier. Says he'll get to go home tomorrow, but he'll need someone to stay with him for a while. He's on strict bed rest. I would offer, but I'm sure he'd rather you do it.
I set my purse down on the couch. It's fine. I can stay with him if he's okay with it.
I'm perfectly okay with that,
Luke says from his bed. I glance in his direction and he's smiling at me lazily. Ryan laughs and says,
I'll stop by in the morning after my meeting with Young.
Luke nods and then motions for me.
Come here.
I walk toward him as Ryan leaves the room. Just like every other time I visit him, he scoots over and makes room for me to lie with him. I wrap my leg over his and my arm over his chest, resting my head on his shoulder.
How's your brother?
He asks. Good, I say. Really good. You'll have to go with me soon if you're up for it. He kept looking up at the door like you were going to show up, so I know he was disappointed that you weren't with me. I feel the light laughter in Luke's chest.
I tried to sneak out and go with you today, but someone is being overprotective.
I shake my head. You got shot in the chest, Luke. You almost died. I'm not taking any chances. I lift my head from his shoulder. Speaking of taking chances, what exactly did the doctor say about your release tomorrow? Bed rest? No strenuous activity? He runs a hand through my hair and smiles at me.
What if I told you he said plenty of bed rest and strenuous activity?
I'd call you a liar, he makes a face.
4 to 6 weeks, he said. Doctor says my heart needs to take it easy. Do you know how difficult that's going to be with you taking care of me?
I run my fingers over his chest, feeling the bandages beneath his hospital gown. 4 to 6 weeks is nothing when we have forever. He laughs a little.
Easy for you to say. Guys think about sex every 7 seconds.
That's a myth, I tell him. I learned in biological science that it's actually only 34 times a day. Luke stares at me for a few quiet seconds and then says,
That's still almost 1,000 times in the next 4 weeks. I'll have to refrain.
I shake my head with a smile. I'll try to make it easy on you then. I won't shower or brush my hair or put on makeup for the next month.
That won't help, he says. Might even make it worse.
I lower my head and press my lips to his neck. If it's too hard on you, we can hire a male nurse to take care of you instead of me, I tease. Luke tightens his arm around me and yawns.
No one is taking care of me but you.
He whispers. I can hear the pain meds kicking in by the sound of his voice, so I don't respond to him.
We lie there for a while until I'm almost certain he's asleep, but then he says,
Sloane, where are you staying?
I was waiting for this question. He's been here in the hospital for 2 weeks now, and every time he starts to bring up my living situation, I tell him we'll talk about it later. I have a feeling he's not going to let me redirect the conversation this time. In a hotel? He instantly stiffens, reaching to my chin to lift my face to his.
Are you kidding me?
I shrug. It's fine, Luke. I'll find an apartment soon.
Which hotel?
The one on Stratton. His jaw hardens.
You're checking out today. You shouldn't be there alone. It's not a safe neighborhood.
He tries to adjust himself to where he's sitting up, lifting the head of the bed several inches.
Why have you not told me this?
I flick my hand at him. You almost died, Luke. The last thing you need right now is to stress over my situation more than you already have. He drops his head back to his pillow, raking his hands over his face. He locks eyes with me.
You'll stay with me. I need the help anyway. There's no point in you paying for a hotel.
I'm not moving in with you. I'll come take care of you for however long you need me to, but we barely know each other. That's too much, too soon. He lowers his chin and stares at me, hard.
You're staying with me, Sloane. I'm not asking you to make it permanent, but until I'm recovered and you have your own apartment, you aren't going back to that hotel.
It really is a scary hotel, but it's all I could afford. After Asa was arrested, I grabbed my hidden stash and a few items of clothing and haven't stepped foot back inside that house. I nod. 2 weeks, tops. Then I'll have my own place. He sighs, relieved that I'm not arguing, but I honestly have no idea how I'll be able to afford an apartment in 2 weeks. I'll have to find a job and a car. I had to borrow Luke's car to visit Stephen today, and I've been borrowing it to get to class, but I can't keep doing that. I feel Luke's hand slide through my hair and wrap around the nape of my neck. When our eyes meet, there's a softness in his that wasn't there a few seconds ago.
Stop overthinking it, he says quietly. You aren't in this alone anymore, okay?
I release a sigh. Okay, I whisper. It's the first time in my life I feel like my burdens aren't all mine. I've never met anyone who brings more relief to my life than they do stress. Until Luke. Love shouldn't feel like added weight. It should make you feel as light as air. Asa made everything in my life heavy. Luke makes me feel like I'm floating. I guess that's the difference between being loved the right way and the wrong way. You either feel tethered to an anchor, or you feel like you're flying. You need anything else? I ask him. It's the first time I've ever been to Luke's place, and I was shocked to see that it's very normal. A home in a neighborhood about an hour or so from where I lived with Asa. It's even closer to my brother's facility. Luke says he rents the house. He doesn't own it. He never knows what his jobs are going to be, so he hasn't been ready to commit to a mortgage yet.
I'm fine, Luke says. Stop worrying. I'll let you know if I need anything, okay?
I nod. I glance around his bedroom, not really knowing what I should do with myself. He probably wants some sleep since he just got discharged from the hospital. It just feels weird with this not being my house.
You want to crawl in bed with me and watch a movie?
He asks, lifting the blanket. That sounds like heaven. I crawl into bed and snuggle up to him, just like I did at the hospital every day. He turns on the TV and begins flipping through the channels. After a minute or so, he says,
Thank you, Sloane.
I glance up at him. For what? His eyes scroll over my face slowly.
For everything, he whispers. For taking care of me. For being as strong as you are despite everything you've been through.
I know the doctor said no strenuous activity, but I doubt the doctor knew Luke could say such appealing things. I press my lips to his because it feels hella good being thanked and complimented. Heck, just having someone be nice to me is so new, it makes me melt every time he opens his mouth. His hand comes around to the back of my head and he kisses me harder.
This isn't good. Luke is right. 4 weeks of this, and we're expected to refrain? Jesus Christ, we're screwed.
But then we're spared by a loud knock on the door.
I'll get it, he says, pulling back the covers.
I yank the covers back over him. No, you won't. You'll rest. I'll get the door.
He grabs my hand as I'm sliding off the bed. Check the peephole first, he says. If it's Ryan, he'll scratch his neck to let you know it's safe to open the door. If he doesn't scratch his neck, do not open that door.
I pause, wondering why their silent codes are even necessary. I don't ask, though. This undercover shit is going to take some getting used to. I hope Luke was serious when he said he was switching professions.
When I reach the front door and check the peephole, sure enough, Ryan is scratching at his neck.
But there's someone else with him. A girl.
There's a girl with him, I whisper loudly as I run back into Luke's bedroom.
Long blonde hair, he asks. I nod. That's fine. It's just Tilly.
Tilly. Great.
I go back to the living room and enter the passcode to the alarm, then open the door.
Hey,
Ryan says, making his way inside, followed by Tilly. She smiles at me, but I'm already intimidated by her. She's a few inches taller than me, decked out in sleek black pants and a tucked-in white-collared shirt. She has the top two buttons open, revealing a shiny silver-braided necklace. I've never seen Simple look this good.
Tilly, this is Sloane. Sloane, Tilly.
She reaches out to shake my hand, and it almost hurts she has such a good grip. I can't help but think about the fact that she's made out with Luke. Even if it was just for work, it still makes my stomach feel weird knowing this fact about them. I don't let it bother me too much, though. I get it. As if she can read my mind, she says, I'm sorry about making out with Luke in your house. It was necessary, but will never happen again. Believe me, it's almost as bad as when I had to kiss this one for show, she says, pointing at Ryan. Ryan rolls his eyes.
Tilly, 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 he says. That was over a year ago, and you still can't stop thinking about my tongue in your mouth.
She nods. Nightmares are hard to overcome. I laugh. I instantly like her. I close the door behind me and point to the bedroom. He's in his room, I tell them both. Ryan glances toward the room and then back at me. There's something in his expression that concerns me, but he's trying to hide it with a forced smile.
You mind if we talk to Luke alone?
He asks. I cross one arm over my stomach and grab the other. I look back and forth between him and Tilly. Does it have to do with Asa? I can see Tilly look briefly in Ryan's direction, her eyes revealing that Asa is exactly what they intend to talk to Luke about. I want to know, I say to them. If you don't let me hear what you're going to tell him, I'll eavesdrop at the door. Ryan doesn't laugh. His lips tighten together, and he just nods.
Fair enough, he says.
They both turn to walk into Luke's bedroom, and I'm forced to inhale a calming breath. This feels worrisome.
46. Luke. I can see Tilly and Ryan making their way into my bedroom, but my eyes are on Sloane. She's standing in the living room with her eyes closed, looking like she's about to be sick. What'd you say to her? I ask Ryan. Right when I ask him that question, she blows out a rush of air, opens her eyes, stands up straight, and walks toward my bedroom. Ryan shakes his head. Nothing. She's insisting on being in here for what I'm about to tell you. Sloane is in the bedroom now, leaning against the door, watching as Ryan and Tilly make their way around the room to the couch. The last thing I want is for Sloane to be involved. If I could have my way, she'd never have to hear Asa's name again. But I know we've got a long road ahead of us and a lot of court hearings, possibly even testimonies on the stand. So, until Asa is convicted and put away for good, I know I'm not going to be able to protect her from all of it. Instead, I pat the spot beside me on the bed and encourage her to come sit with me. She does. Once she's settled next to me and we're both propped against the headboard, I look at Ryan. What is it you don't want to tell me? He shakes his head and leans forward, clasping his hands in front of him. I don't even know where to start, he says, his eyes meeting mine. I met with Young today. And? It wasn't good, Ryan says. I don't even know how to sugarcoat this, so I'm just going to explain it in a way you'll both understand. Sloane's hand wraps around mine, and I can already feel her shaking. I squeeze her hand for reassurance. Ryan tends to overdramatize situations. I just wish Sloane knew that so she wouldn't be this worried. Asa is claiming he shot the guy in his bedroom out of self-defense. Sloane scoffs. It wasn't self-defense, she says. I was there. Ryan nods softly. Not in defense of himself, he says. He claims he was defending you, that he heard you screaming for help, and when he walked into his room, the guy was attacking you and he was holding a gun. He claims he had no other choice but to stop him before he killed you. Sloane is shaking her head. It wasn't. She looks at me. Luke, he didn't have to kill him. I knew Asa was going to pull this shit. I wrap my arm around Sloane and refocus my attention on Ryan. What does this mean exactly? I ask. When it goes to trial, his defense won't stand up to Sloane's testimony? Ryan blows out a quick breath. That's what we're hoping, he says. If it goes to trial.
If?
Sloane says, voicing my exact thought. Tilly speaks up this time.
The thing is, she says, it's a solid case of self-defense. The guy was holding an unauthorized weapon. Sloane was screaming for help. He was attacking her. Even with her testimony, Asa's defense holds up, and the gun he used was a legal firearm registered in his name, unlike the victim. Also, Asa is claiming to have no knowledge of who the men were who broke into the home, and the police haven't located any of the men who fled, only the victim, who, so far, has no ties to Asa that we can prove.
I rake my hands down my face. I can hear Sloane's breaths speed up as she begins to realize what Ryan and Tilly are telling us. But what about the three of us? I ask Ryan. It's our word against his. We know he orchestrated that entire thing. He admitted to it out loud. Ryan nods. He admitted it to you, Luke, he says. I never heard him say it, so I won't be able to testify against him. I wasn't in the room with the two of you, and... Ryan pauses. Tilly leans forward and says,
He's claiming the two of you set him up.
I sit up straight. Are you fucking kidding me? What jury is going to believe that shit? This is ridiculous. They're in here saying absurd shit and upsetting Sloane. I shouldn't have let Ryan talk to me about this in front of her. I know this sounds crazy, Ryan says. We all know how guilty he is, but to a jury... How do you think it's going to look that Asa's fiance was knowingly sleeping with the undercover cop who was trying to have him arrested? How do you think it's going to look to a jury when it's Asa's fiance and that undercover cop's word against his? Sloane's hand slips from mine and she covers her face. My chest is starting to ache with all of this. You knew I was pursuing her, Ryan. If I knew it would jeopardize the case... I was about to say I wouldn't have done it, but I shut my mouth. Because I would have done it. I did do it. I pursued her no matter the consequences, and now it's putting us in a huge fucking bind.
Depending on the judge, Tilly says, he might throw the case out before it even goes to trial. Most cases of self-defense are ruled justified homicide if there's a witness to corroborate the defendant's story.
There's no one to corroborate his story, though, I say. Both Ryan and Tilly look at Sloane. Ryan nudges his head at her. Sloane's story will most likely corroborate his claim of self-defense.
How?
Sloane says, flabbergasted. Ryan stands up and walks around the bed, leaning against the wall nearest Sloane. Was the victim attacking you? He asks. Sloane nods. Was he holding a gun? Sloane nods again. Was he impersonating an officer? Another nod. Did you scream for help? She doesn't nod this time. A tear just pours down her cheek.
Twice, she whispers.
And how did you feel when Asa walked into the room? Ryan asks. A jury is going to ask you these questions under oath. A sob breaks from her chest.
Relieved, she whispers through tears. Terrified and relieved.
Ryan nods. That's enough to back up his claims, Sloane. He rescued you from an attacker. That's hardly murder in the eyes of a jury, no matter how evil we all know he is. His whole character isn't what will be on trial, only that one action.
But,
Sloane wipes tears from her eyes,
He didn't have to shoot him. He could have stopped him without killing him.
Ryan nods in agreement. I know he could have. We all do. But the jury won't know Asa like we do. And they'll put you up on the stand and tear you apart, Sloane. They'll make Asa look like the victim because you're his fiancé, yet you were knowingly having an affair with the undercover cop who was developing a case against him. That will lend sympathy to Asa's case, and your testimony against Asa will lose any and all credibility in the eyes of the jury. Sloane stands up, wiping at her eyes again.
What about your case against Asa? Won't that back up my claims? Won't that have any bearing on the potential murder charge?
Ryan's eyes meet mine. He releases a rush of air and then walks back to the couch. That's another reason why we're here, he says. Young doesn't want to move forward with any charges in our investigation. None of our reports were complete because our investigation was still ongoing. Young is afraid if we press charges and this goes to trial, the department will be ripped to shreds in the press. It doesn't look good that one of our cops was involved in an affair with our main subject's fiancée. The fact that we broke cover to fake agents, they're afraid the chances of Asa actually being charged with anything are far less than the chances of us ruining the department's reputation. Young is requesting the case be closed and no charges be filed. He says it's not worth the risk.
Oh my God,
Sloane says, taking a seat on the bed. She drops her elbows to her knees and holds her head in her hands.
This is all my fault,
she whispers. I reach over and pull her hand to mine. Sloane, it's not your fault. It's my fault. I was the one on duty. I look up at Ryan. What about the fact that he tried to kill me? He shot me in the chest, and that wasn't self-defense. He'll be charged with that, right? I can see the roll of Ryan's throat as he swallows. You have to be fucking kidding me, I whisper, dropping my head against the headboard. He's claiming self-defense in that case, too, Ryan says. You both shot each other. Sloane was the only witness in the room. I can only testify to what I heard from outside the door. He almost killed me, Ryan. Ryan and Tilly both glance at each other. Tilly clears her throat and then says,
The thing is, Luke, with the shitstorm of that whole day, if the DA charges him with anything, chances are you'll be charged, too. And you'll both go to trial.
I'll be charged? What the fuck will I be charged with?
It depends on the judge. Felony assault? Attempted murder? And without the department taking the case to court, it will look like you and Asa just had a standoff in a bedroom, the result of a love triangle gone wrong.
I can hear Sloane crying now. I can't even force another question. My mind is going in all fucking directions now. So you're telling me that not only does this sick fucker have a chance at getting away with everything he did, I'm looking at facing charges? Ryan nods slowly. Unless we work out some sort of a plea deal. His lawyers are pushing for it. They want us to agree to drop the charges in exchange for information on John and Kevin and a few other people in the investigation. Like I said, Luke, it all depends on the judge. And the district attorney, of course. That's a good thing because the DA likes you. I don't see him pushing for anything when it comes to charges against you. But if we push for charges to be brought against Asa, his lawyers are going to push back. So you need to think about that long and hard. I can't even believe what I'm hearing right now.
What about everything else he's done? Sloane asks. All the times he forced himself on me. Can I not press charges against him for that?
Tilly nods.
He raped you?
Sloane glances at me, then back at Tilly. She shrugs.
I don't even know, she says quietly. There were several times I was terrified he would hurt me, so I just let him.
Tilly stands up and walks over to the bed, sitting next to Sloane.
Did you ever tell him no? Did you ever ask him to stop and he refused?
Sloane pauses in thought and then shakes her head.
I was too scared to say no.
Tilly tilts her head in sympathy and squeezes Sloane's hand.
You'll have to testify in court, she says. I'm sure he'll claim he wasn't aware you didn't want to have sex with him. I doubt Asa would ever admit to any wrongdoing, but if that's a route you want to go, we'll support you.
I appreciate that, but we all know that would be a waste of time without proof.
Sloane's head falls back into her hands. Then she just leans toward me and collapses against my chest. I wrap my arms around her and press my lips to her head, feeling how defeated she is.
I'm sorry, Tilly says. There were several things that could have been handled differently to prepare for a solid case against him, several things that prevent us from pursuing Asa like we wish we could.
You mean several things I messed up, I interject. Ryan stands. Don't be so hard on yourself, Luke. I encouraged several of those mistakes. Sometimes cases are cut and dry. Sometimes we get everything we need before the end of an investigation. Unfortunately, this isn't one of those. This one was messy from beginning to end, and there isn't much we can work with at this point. What about the search of his house? They found nothing in his house after John and Kevin cleared out with whatever would enable us to file charges. All they found was some unexplained cash and a stash of prescription pills. It's not enough to go after him. Not with the way Asa and his lawyers are going to fire back at us. Sometimes it's just not worth the fight. I feel Sloane tense against me. She lifts up and glares at Ryan.
Not worth the fight, she says. He murdered someone, and he would have killed Luke if it weren't for 6 fucking centimeters. Now you're saying he'll likely walk free? He's going to be able to find me, to find Luke? Because he's not giving up, Ryan. He won't give up until Luke is dead, and you know that.
Sloane, I say, pulling her back to me, stop. We don't know that he won't be convicted of anything yet. She cries against my chest, and I hold her while Ryan stares down at her, the regret and sympathy evident in his expression. I'm sorry, Sloane, he says. I really am. He looks at me and his eyes are saying the same thing to me. I nod, letting him know I understand. This isn't Ryan's fault. This isn't anyone's fault but my own. Ryan and Tilly both walk toward the door. I pull Sloane against me and hold her, trying to ease her fears. But her whole body is racked with tremors. I never knew just how scared she was of Asa until this moment. It'll be okay, Sloane. You aren't alone this time. I'm here and I won't let him hurt you. I swear. I hold her until she falls asleep in my arms from pure exhaustion.
47. Asa.
Do you have any questions? My lawyer asks. His name is Paul. Same as my father. I almost refused him when I found that out, but he's got the best reputation in the state. I won't hold it against him that he shares a name with the person I hate the second most in this world. Luke is the first. No, I say. We walk into the courtroom, I plead self-defense, and the judge decides whether or not it goes to trial. Paul nods.
That's right.
I stand up, the cuffs digging into my wrists. I hate that Sloane is going to see me with these on. It's a little emasculating, and I hate for her to see me in any other light than she always has. At least they let me wear a suit today, and I don't have to walk in with that ridiculous, standard-issue orange jumpsuit on. Orange is not my color, and I know for a fact that this suit is Sloane's favorite.
Let's do this, I say to Paul. Piece of fucking cake.
Paul nods quickly and stands. I can tell he doesn't like my confidence. He hasn't liked it since the moment we met. I'm also not sure that he likes me, but I couldn't give 2 fucks what he thinks of me. As long as he clears me of these charges, he'll be my favorite person in the world. Well, second favorite. So far, Sloane is still in the top spot. Sure, she's done a lot of fucking shit to piss me off, but I know it was all thanks to Luke and the lies he told her. I'm sure she's spent enough time with him now and enough time apart from me to be coming to her senses. I follow Paul out of the room, quickly flanked by 4 guards, 2 in front and 2 behind me. A 5th guard opens the door to the courtroom, and as soon as we file through the door, I scan the crowd for her. I see him first. The cocky fucking bastard sitting 2nd row next to his little bitch friend Dalton. Or Ryan. Whatever the fuck his name is. Sloane isn't sitting next to him, though. She's sitting in the far corner on the back row by herself. I smile at her, but she glances away as soon as her eyes land on mine. There's 1 of 2 reasons why she isn't sitting with Luke. She either figured out his bullshit by now and wants nothing to do with him, or they were advised not to sit together in the courtroom, thanks to their little indiscretion behind my fucking back.
I'll go with the former. I take my seat, but I keep my eyes on Sloane. Doing so means I'm turned sideways in my chair, not facing where the judge will sit. But that's fine. I'm not looking away from her until she makes eye contact with me again.
"All rise for the Honorable Judge Isaac," a guard says.
I rise, but I don't stop staring at Sloane. I can hear doors open and steps being taken, but I'm not going to fucking look at that man until she makes eye contact with me. She's wearing a new dress. A black one. It looks like she's going to a fucking funeral. Her hair is pulled back and up in a twist. She looks sophisticated. Sexy as hell. My dick twitches in my pants, and I wish I could ask for a bathroom break and take her to a hallway and pull her dress up around her waist and press my fucking face between her legs.
"You may be seated."
I sit. Fucking hell, it's hot in here. I hear the judge start talking at the same time Paul slides me a piece of paper. I glance down at it long enough to read it. "You need to face forward out of respect for the judge." I laugh under my breath and grab the pen. "Fuck the judge and fuck you, Paul," I write. I slide the note back to him and return my eyes to Sloane. She's looking at me now. Her eyes are locked with mine, and her lips are pressed together real tight like she's nervous. I like that. I love it, actually. She's feeling something while she looks at me, and I can tell she isn't thinking about Luke at all right now. "I love you," I mouth. Sloane's eyes drop to my mouth, and I smile at her. Then that stupid fuck, that ridiculous fuck-face motherfucking stupid fuck, stands up and walks to the back of the courtroom, right to where she's seated. He makes his way down the aisle until he plants himself right next to her. He wraps his arm around my fiancé, and she squeezes her eyes shut and buries her face against his shoulder, like she's relieved he moved to be next to her. My eyes meet his. The fucking motherfucking fuckface brainwashing fuck. And he leans forward, blocking my view of her. He stares at me, hard, like he's threatening me to turn around. I want to kill him. For a few seconds, I try to think of ways I can do that. Grab the security guard's gun and shoot him. Run to the back of the courtroom and break his fucking neck. Grab the pen that I just wrote Paul the note with and shove it right in his carotid artery. But I don't. I refrain. Because I'm pretty sure this case is going in my favor, and I'll be out on bail until the next hearing. His murder can wait. It needs to be planned out with more precision, and preferably without the eyes of a judge on me. I decide to turn around. Not because Luke threatens me to do so with that fucking look in his eyes, but because I need to convince this judge that he's making the right decision when he throws this case out due to self-defense. I try to follow along as both lawyers stand up and speak. I try to follow along as the judge responds to each of them. I smile when the judge looks at me. But inside, my blood is boiling. Knowing Luke is back there, sitting next to her, holding her. That means she's probably been with him at night, while I'm forced to fuck my own hand, alone in my jail cell. It also means he's probably been inside her. His fingers, his dick, his fucking tongue. Tasting and taking what's mine. What was supposed to be only mine. My pulse is raging when the judge's gavel comes down.
"This court session is adjourned."
I breathe in slowly through my nose. I release it when I look at Paul. "What the fuck just happened?" He makes a face like I'm supposed to keep my voice low. My eyes flick to the back of the room when I hear Sloane's cry. Luke is helping her stand, but her arms are around him and she's crying, sobbing. She's upset. That can't be good news for me. She's upset for me.
Is this going to trial? I ask Paul. You said this wasn't going to fucking trial. Paul shakes his skinny little head.
The judge decided not to take it to trial, Paul says. Which means your claims of self-defense were upheld. You'll have to go back to your cell, but only until I can bail you out on the other charges pending against you. It may be 4 or 5 hours, but I'll come get you once your bail is posted.
I glance back at Sloane, watching as Luke helps her out of the courtroom. Why is she crying then? If the charges against me were dismissed, why is she crying? How long do you think it takes someone to recover from being completely fucking brainwashed? Paul looks at me.
What are you talking about, Asa?
Like, how much therapy do you think a person will need in order to get over being brainwashed? A few weeks? Months? More than a year? Paul stares at me a moment and then shakes his head.
I'll see you in a few hours, Asa.
He stands, so I stand. The same 4 guards escort me out of the courtroom. I should probably be fucking ecstatic that this case just got thrown out. The next one should be even easier, because Paul says Luke's department isn't pressing charges. So as long as I cut a plea deal, undergo some psychiatric treatment, and give them the information they want on John and Kevin, I more than likely won't be charged with shooting Luke in the chest. That says a lot about our court system. I attempt to kill a guy in cold blood, and I walk free because I tattle and claim a mental illness? I fucking love the USA. It almost feels like all my efforts have gone to waste, though. Since the moment I started growing suspicious that someone was brainwashing Sloane, I've been concocting this elaborate scheme, and I'm not even really getting credit for it. I had to deny having anything to do with the fake raid, which was really hard for my ego. I'm fucking proud of that, and I want to brag to the world that I pulled it off flawlessly. Not to mention the schizophrenia shit. Shower with your clothes on, check the lock on a door a few times, and people think you're losing your fucking mind. I had to pretend I inherited it, though. I know myself, and I knew if I found out my suspicions were true and Sloane was fucking someone else, that I would more than likely lose my shit and murder the guy. I can't very well murder someone and run the risk of being tried as a mentally competent adult. I had to have a backup plan so I wouldn't rot in fucking prison like my father did most of his life. So my backup plan was pretending to be insane. I googled some symptoms in the DSM and convinced everyone around me I was losing my mind. Maybe it wasn't a complete waste. I at least have the schizophrenia to fall back on if I ever need it, which I probably will eventually, because Luke is still breathing. When I make it back to my cell, I fall down onto the bed as the bars clank shut behind me. I can't help but smile. This whole thing is turning out so beautifully. Sloane will take some time to come around again, but I know she will. Especially once Luke is out of the picture for good. I'll have to somehow look past the fact that Luke has been inside her. I can fuck him out of her, though. I'll just have to fuck her a whole goddamn bunch and in every position until I no longer think about him when I look at her.
What are you so fucking happy about? A voice says.
I turn my head and look at my cellmate. I can't remember his name. He's asked me about a million questions since I was thrown in this cell with him, but this is the first time I actually answer him. I'm about to be a free man, I tell him, staring up at the ceiling with a huge goddamn fucking smile on my face, which means I finally get to marry my fiancé in a real wedding, with a 3-tier coconut cake. I can't help but laugh just thinking about it.
I'm coming for you, Sloane. Whether you think you want me to or not, you promised to love me. Forever. And you fucking will.
48. Sloane. I bring the cup of coffee to my mouth, My hands are shaking so bad it makes tiny little black waves of coffee crash against the sides of my cup. I glance over at the clock on the far wall. 3 in the morning. It's been 2 days since Ace's case was thrown out. He was bailed out that afternoon. Luke and I were sent to this apartment in the city for protection until the next hearing. It's a nice apartment, but when I'm too scared to step outside or even look out the window, it feels more like a prison. Luke has assured me over and over that there's no way Asa will find us here. But what Luke probably doesn't understand is that even if Asa is locked up in prison the rest of his life, I'll still constantly be looking over my shoulder. If it isn't Asa himself who could hurt me or Luke, I wouldn't put it past him to hire someone else to do it. I turn my head when I hear the bedroom door open. Luke walks out, rubbing the sleep out of his eyes. He's wearing black jogging pants that hang off his hips and no shirt. The bandages from his wound cover part of his chest. He's barefoot, shuffling across the hardwood floor toward me. He reaches the back of the couch, and I lean my head back and look up at him. He leans forward and kisses my forehead upside down.
You okay?
I shrug. I can't sleep. Again. His eyes are sympathetic, and he lifts a hand, brushing my hair off my forehead.
Sloane, he says quietly. You don't have to worry here. He can't find us. We're safe until his next trial, I promise.
I nod again, but his words do little to comfort me. I'll never trust Asa, no matter how safe I should feel. He walks around the couch and sits down, pulling me onto his lap until I'm straddling him. He wraps his hands around my lower back and says,
What can I do to help you sleep?
I smile. I like his distraction methods. It's only been 2 weeks since you were released. You have 2 more to go. His hands cup my ass beneath his oversized t-shirt I'm wearing. He slides his fingers beneath